Welcome to the art and science of difficult conversations. I'm Chris.
And I'm Lucy, and we love having difficult conversations.
That's right. And each week, we'll either share a tip, hear how others have gotten better at difficult conversations, or demonstrate common difficult conversations and what to do and what not to do.
Let's get into it. Steven, thank you so much for saying yes to my invitation to be our special guest on another episode of our podcast. Really appreciate you. And I am so grateful and joyful and really appreciate you as a friend for the privilege of having you as a friend. You've inspired me in many ways, and I truly admire your kindness and your growth mindset. And when I was thinking about what kind of guests I would love to see and hear on our podcast, you came to mind. Also because you shared some wonderful stories on your LinkedIn recently. And it was around having conversations, difficult conversations. And I thought, oh my God, Steven, I need to see if he would say yes. And you did. So thank you.
Oh, of course. Thank you.
Now, what about if you share a little bit about yourself, and then we'll see. I will start asking some questions that, you know, I love to ask.
And you ask amazing questions, too. So the ones that really, poke at the core of my soul and help me answer. So absolutely. Well, Lucy, thank you to you and your partner for having me on. Very much happy to share value here. So a little bit about me, and I'm not a big fan of talking about myself. But I come from a background of kind of all over the place. I was one of those people who just kind of drifted through life, never really knowing what to do with myself. And there's a lot that went into my, or still goes into my story. But basically, at some point, I asked myself, what is the problem with employee retention? Or rather, what is the cause behind things like the Great Resignation happening? Can it all be related to things like COVID? And of course, big events, big life-altering events like that do have an effect. However, when you really pull back and you look at the big picture, employee retention and engagement and satisfaction has just been an ongoing challenge for so many people. Asking myself that question and being someone who was a part of the Great Resignation, I stepped back and said, I want to be part of the solution. I don't want to be part of the problem anymore. And what I found through that, Lucy, and through a lot of great people who introduced me to other people, networking was a huge part of where I'm at today. I found myself in the, DISC styles training area, all around behavior and personality. And what I ended up realizing was that the majority of problems comes down to communication and how well or how unwell we tend to do it. And from all of that can actually come the solutions to things like retention, to engagement. That is to say that the solution is so much more simpler than the right benefit or the right working hours or days. It really comes down to communicating from me to you in a way that you actually feel heard and understood, and vice versa, so that we can innovate and grow and be, happy and satisfied together with where we work. And not just at work, but also at home, taking these ideas and behaviors home so that the person you're talking to, who may be your exact opposite, like my wife, you stop seeing as the core of a frustration and instead your partner in innovation and creativity. So there's so much with that. That's where I'm at today, and I'm currently a vice president here at Take Flight Learning, and what I do is really just help get the word out there that communication can be as simple as knowing which bird you are. So with that, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you, Steven. And there's so much gold in there. Just hearing you, you touch a little bit on your professional journey and being part of the Great Resignation and then wanting to actually look for solutions and also finding solutions through the communication and how to make communication better, be it in the workplace and bringing more of the human aspect, sounds like, into the workplace, having conversations where we can understand each other, where we are coming from. And, you also mentioned that with your wife communication. So it also having these conversations is important both in the workplace and in a personal life. Mm-hmm. And now, as I ended on the personal life note, I'm curious, what would you say from your personal experience for you, what makes conversations difficult?
From my personal experience, I would say what makes conversations different or difficult and different is just the fact that not everyone is exactly like me. The very idea that we're not the only person living in our own world and everybody else is just, let me back up. The way I like to describe it is like, I used to be really big into video games and I still like to play them. You have these people called NPCs, right? They're non-playable characters and they're just there to create atmosphere to the game. You might have somebody who's a merchant at a store. You might have somebody who is who's a king in a castle, but these people are just there to enhance your experience. I feel like we are in grave error when we start to think that that is the way the world is. And we don't realize that every person we see is not this non-playable character. They are, for all intents and purposes, the main character of their life. They are living this immense experience. They have these problems and challenges and good times and bad times, all of these things within them. So I'd say the most difficult thing about communication is realizing that we aren't, that other people exist and they don't think the same way that we do. And that's not a bad thing. I'd say that's kind of the big part of it. And realizing that communication by itself is kind of an amoral thing. Just because you communicate one way does not mean that somebody else communicating a different way is bad. It's just different. And there's more opportunities and strengths you would find in that than anything hindering.
Wow, that's a cool definition. And I love the analogy with the video game. And sounds like that also creating the sense of empathy and understanding for putting ourselves maybe in the other person's shoes and seeing this is actually important to them. That's a different style and doesn't mean that it's bad. And a different opinion doesn't mean it's like not a morally wrong necessarily.
Absolutely.
In your family background, what would you say? Was it easy to have these difficult conversations with the family members? Did you talk with more ease about difficult subjects, topics, or was it more some taboo topics there too?
A little bit of everything. So I'll say with my family, I grew up, and I'm not sure if they would see things this way. I'm going to be very careful. If for some reason they end up seeing this, nobody here is on LinkedIn, but you know, wherever they'd see it elsewise, this is all meant just as a statement of fact. But my whole family are very extroverted, very energetic people. My mom, my dad, both of my sisters, I would say they are in the personality world. They're what we call parrots. They're very interactive, very positive, very enthusiastic. And they're not all the same. They each have different shades and intensities of that. However, I was the only person and still am not a parrot. I am the exact opposite. I'm what you call an owl. Very, very withdrawn, analytical, very data driven. I'm a classical introvert, if you will, non-social and very, it takes a lot to get me out somewhere. So growing up, I often had the impression that I was holding everybody else back, that I was making things less fun, that I was kind of a drain on everybody's energy. And more than a few times, I was even told, I would say there was a period in my life where I moved away from home. And when I came back, I was a little more in touch with who I was. And I remember being told multiple times, like, you used to be a lot more fun. You used to enjoy these things. And that hurt at the time. Now I've come around to understanding exactly why they saw that, because they saw somebody who was trying their very best to fit a certain mold that he saw every day. Whereas I realized, oh my goodness, that's not actually who I am. I'm going to be more myself. And what that did for our conversations, and they were always difficult because I felt like I always had to muster as much energy as possible just to hold a conversation. Even something like this is not extremely charging, but with people who, you know, are constantly extroverted all the time, it was really tough. So it was just difficult really to be myself. And that was the hardest part. It's hard to have a conversation that's honest and open and authentic when you feel like you can't actually speak from the heart. You can't speak from who you are. And I will say now, my family, you know, I've introduced them to personality styles and the birds, and I think they're coming around. They kind of see it. It's one of those things where you can't deny. It's just, it's objective truth. You just get it. And they're just like, oh, okay, well, I never saw you that way, but apparently that's who you are. So the conversations are still tough, but they're coming around. They're better. So I hope that made sense.
Yes, it did. And really, thank you so much for being vulnerable here and going there and sharing. And I think that also gives hopes to all the other introverts here. And I also hear some of my clients, Lucy, I'm really introverted and I'm really uncomfortable speaking up or, you know, public speech. I would never be able to do that. And look at you. Thank you. Really appreciate you for sharing as an introvert coming here on the podcast and kind of improvising here based on the questions that you didn't know I would ask with specific questions. So really acknowledge you. And it shows your growth potential. And I would say it can also give hopes to all the other introverts here who are being challenged in having those conversations.
And can I add something?
Yeah,
I will say just to that note, let me yes and with you. Just because you're introverted does not mean that you can't do anything like public speaking or keynoting or podcasting. It is a significant stretch for someone like me, or we like to call it a flex in the personality world. You have to flex a little harder to get there, and it is draining, but it is a skill that you can learn. And I would argue it's even a skill that you can turn into a charging activity over time. May not mean that you can completely change your personality. I don't know if that's something you'd really want to do. Being an introvert is not a bad thing. Being an extrovert is not a bad thing. However, like you said, there's plenty of hope for people out there like me. It just takes practice and really studying people who are good at it, seeing how they do it and learning those skills. And I would say that just because something's a skill or just because something's easy for someone else does not mean it's not a skill. And that is kind of the final piece, is realizing what is, just because, you know, my mom, for instance, has no problem speaking up about anything, that is a hard skill for me. Just like in that LinkedIn post where I wrote about getting my order wrong, and my wife went in there and got everything fixed and was very kind. And that I could not have done. Well, I could have. It's just very hard to go in and say something's wrong because I don't want to disrupt the status quo, but it was easy for her. It's a skill that I can build. So that's that.
You know, so it sounds like really you're bringing that area of practice and kind of awareness and really studying and the knowledge. So it sounds like the path to improve our conversations, and that's also one of the reasons we have this podcast, to really support all of us in having these difficult conversations. And you're bringing another aspect of really what can make these conversations difficult is actually for introverts, that just speaking can be difficult and draining. Even public speaking can be draining. Mm-hmm. What would you say helps you? You've mentioned that you can make them even more charging, these experiences. What would you say supports you?
I would say there's a couple of things, but probably the main thing that I do, and this is actually something I learned from you, Lucy, so I appreciate you, but taking the time before things that I know will be draining to actually do a lot of mindfulness, really centering myself, and I've heard it called arriving to where I'm at, and just being here and letting, you know, I guess being actively present. And there's something that happens in the brain where and this is something as an introvert I've had wrong my whole life. I thought to be rested, you have to literally do nothing for a certain amount of time. It's actually not good for recharging. So, but to be actively present, I found really, really, really helps me calm my nerves and be ready for this. And I also have a rule that I've recently implemented and have always tried to do something like this, but you know, I prepare for something so much and I shut it down. And I, for instance, like something like this podcast, I set aside an amount of time. this is what we're going to talk about. I make sure that I know a couple of things I can have, but I don't focus on that the rest of the night. I shut it down, I leave it alone, and then when it comes to it. So just being very measured, protective, and setting boundaries around my time, especially before I do something that is not easy for me. And then the final note is having a lot of grace and compassion for myself, because I never feel like things go great. That's just kind of something I drilled into myself over time. It's not a great habit. It's something I'm working on, but I just kind of I acknowledge the voice of the critic and I let it go. And I think about, you know, what are some great things that came from that? So those are just a couple of things that work for me. I wouldn't say there's one, this is the thing, but just understanding who I am, understanding that it's going to be a big drain, and then giving myself some time to rest and be compassionate about it.
Love that. So it really sounds like that understanding, not just of how others operate, but also understanding yourself and kind of accepting yourself the way you are, rather than judging. Mm-hmm. And another aspect of difficult conversations came to mind as you were talking, kind of the conversations we have with ourselves that could be also challenging. So, and sounds like there is the critical voice that all of us are having, mm-hmm. and there is also the compassionate voice. What would you say might be either easy or what would support you in having that self-compassionate voice?
So really giving myself, and there's a couple ways you could do this, but giving myself space between my thoughts is, I guess, the way I would put it. And this is especially important if you're an introvert and you're intentionally intellectual. And what I mean by intensely intellectual is that you're always thinking, you're always here. We don't have a lot of space between our thoughts because you're going from one to one to one to one. And you know, it could even be more difficult. You could have ADHD like I do, which means your thoughts are going from one to up here, down here, up all around. And there's just not a lot of order to it. And the first thing I will say is what supports me is accepting that, hey, that's okay. It's okay that it's easy to get scatterbrained. But that doesn't mean that it's okay to stay there. I kind of allow myself to accept this is okay. And then I take some time to really just be present and allow the, you know, the right brain to activate. And then I kind of create a gentle plan for where I want to go versus where I'm at. And then as far as the critic goes, and they're usually active the whole time, and mine is so condescending and hurtful. I acknowledge that they're there. And I try to see if maybe there's a real need that's not being met, which is going to be for introverts, for owls like me, it might be not having enough alone time. It might be not having enough shutdown time. A lot of times because I want to be present with my family. And my wife is a parrot. My daughter is a parrot dove. They're both very social creatures. And I don't want to be this absent husband or this absent father. So sometimes it takes, you know, hey, I need 30 minutes to myself here. I do that and it allows me to be more present. So just there's a couple of things that you can do to support yourself, but that's what supports me.
I love that. So really clarity about your own preferences, your style, and also your needs. Sounds like that conversation mm-hmm. with yourself, in a way, asking yourself, what am I needing right now?
Yeah. And just kind of letting the answer come up. I know what I do a lot of times is I ask myself a question and then I immediately answer it. And that never helps. It's like, what do I need? Well, obviously I need this. It's like, if it was that easy, we wouldn't get upset ever. I would say just asking myself what I need and then just really feeling those emotions. And I've learned that they're pretty clear if you listen to them. And a lot of times, again, for introverts like me, it comes down to you've had too much people time today. And for extroverts, it might be the opposite. You haven't had enough. You've been very isolated. You've been very disconnected. My wife is a great example because she is an extroverted style, but she has some introverted tendencies. So if she spends a whole day alone in the house, just busy, which, you know, she loves to, you know, knock out things left and right. So she can get isolated very easily, but because she's a little bit of an introvert, she doesn't seek extroverted things. But if a friend comes by and says, hey, girls' night, we're going out to the brewery, and it's hard to go, but if we can get her to go, she comes back charged and energized and just like, wow, I'm so glad I went out and I was social. So That's the other thing is if you know your behavioral style or your personality style or whatever specific profile that you want to use, actually think about what charges me and then go do that, even if you don't want to. And you'll be surprised how much of a turnaround your day can have.
I love that. So really knowing our tendencies, our preferences, our needs, and also the other person's. How would you say that kind of translates? We talked a lot about the personal life. How does it translate in the workplace, knowing these different personality styles?
So
And
I would, oh.
How that can make, sorry, conversations more easier or more effective?
Right. I mean, there's so many ways. I mean, you take it from the personal life of just, you know, I was reading a stat the other day on why most there, I can't remember what the stat like percentage of divorces. And I wanted to look into that a little more. And it's like, well, why do most people get divorced? And it came down to three or four main things. It was, do you believe in the same thing, like a faith in a God or a faith in God, how you handle your money, parenting. And there was one other, but those, I forget the fourth one, but those four things, if you agreed on those four, you were vastly more likely to remain married for a long time. What I found interesting was personality style didn't have a lot to do with the staying together, but it had a lot to do with the initial attraction. So, and why I'm kind of mentioning that is you want to walk the line of thinking you don't have to be a certain style necessarily to do a certain job or to work with another person, but it does talk a lot about initial reactions and first impressions. And the interesting thing that I would say, oh, the fourth one was awareness and acceptance. It's those two. So the fourth thing is if you are accepting of that other person, and this is where personality is huge in this one piece, because my wife is so extroverted sometimes that sometimes I can feel like I'm watching a blur run around the house. That normally would really bother me. And I had to ask myself, why is that bother me? And it's because it's not something I would do. And so once you realize that, you kind of realize, oh, there's not really a problem here. It's just me kind of unconsciously trying to impose my preferences, my style on this person. So moving it over to the workplace, here's where conversations can be amazing or absolutely destructive, is whether or not you decide to impose your style on the person who works with you. And I'll give you a quick example. Let's just say that you have a manager giving somebody feedback. This manager is a parrot. They're very extroverted. Actually, we've used parrot a lot. Let's say that they're an eagle, which is the direct, dominant, very bottom line style. And they're giving feedback to somebody who's a dove. And the dove style is the S style and disc. We're, you know, supportive. I have a lot of dove. Lucy, I know that you have a lot of dove. We are great listeners. We're very sincere. We're caring. We care about how much you care is one good way to put it. Now, if you're an eagle and you're going to give feedback in an eagle style and you're talking to a dove, here's what could happen. You could say, Lucy, here's what happened. This is what I was expecting from you. This happened instead. We can't have these kinds of results happen. We need to be up here and you're down here. So I need you to do better next time. All right. This is what you're going to do. This is how you're going to get to it. Great session. Now, if you were another eagle, that might have actually been great feedback. That's the interesting thing, because eagles are very goal-driven, very impact, energized. Like, you know what? Yeah, you're right. This didn't work. Let's do this. Like, because they're chasing the goal. But if you'd say that to a dove, you just came off as somebody who only cares about work, does not care about them, could care less about how they feel about how you're talking to them, right? And you can move this back to the family space. If you're just talking to your spouse, who's an eagle, you're talking to them like a dove and you're saying, you know, I really appreciate that you're always present here and you take care of us. And, you know, you're such a wonderful impact on this family and everything that you do really speaks volumes. This eagle is like, okay, I get it. But, you know, what is that done for us? Like, and think about that. That was such a nice, wonderful thing to say, but you're kind of speaking in a different language. So, and this is not to paint the picture that eagles don't have emotions or empathy. Like, that's not at all. Eagles are just more task-driven versus people-driven. So speaking, you know, and I let me pull myself back in here. Let's go back to the example of the eagle employee giving feedback to a dove. This is how you can change that. If you know that this person is a dove, but you want to give them important feedback, this is how you might reshape that. Like, Lucy, Listen, I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, you are such an amazing employee. You've affected all the lives here. I personally feel like the workplace is just brighter with you here. You really make an impact. What you say matters, and I look forward to really just continuing to work with you. So hey, I know I don't want to make a big deal about this because I know how you feel about that. I just want to say from the bottom of my heart, thank you for what you do. Now, there are some things that I really want to focus on this year. And hey, I'm going to help you walk through this. You know, I'm going to hold your hand the whole way. We're going to make it through together, and we're going to really, really do a great job on X project, whatever. And as you can see there, for an eagle, you just got to use a little more of emotional language and really soften your tone. So I say all of this to say this is how important it is. If you know who you are and you know the other person's style, you go from speaking a completely foreign language to them to the language that goes right to their heart. And you're able to actually motivate that individual feels heard, all of it. So I would say, and then you can take it even beyond that and really think about who's on your team. You may have a team of all parrots, all eagles. It may be a mix of every style. You might be the dove manager who is managing a team of eagles. Like, no wonder you're so stressed out. They move at light speed, and you're just trying to methodically put things together. So knowing who you are, who they are, and then understanding that crucial point of how do you flex to meet them where they're at and speak their language is the difference between actually communicating and not communicating at all. We're talking offending people just trying to communicate well. So I'd say it also goes a long way to making a workplace psychologically safe or psychologically abhorrent as well. So.
Yeah. Wow, a lot share. And it really comes back to really understanding ourselves, increasing that self-awareness and awareness of others, which is kind of the emotional intelligence part of that, very important part. And accepting ourselves for the way we are. And at the same time, it doesn't mean we are just gonna say, well, this is how I am, this is how I communicate. But actually really flexing our muscles and knowing that we can learn those skills to make the conversations, make the feedback giving and even possibly receiving much easier and actually more productive experience.
Absolutely. And I would say one last example to share is I used to think this when I first started learning how to flex personality styles and speak like somebody who's not you, is there's that feeling that maybe you are being deceptive or you're trying to be shady. But here's the thing is you never have to worry about that because you're always going to be who you are for the most part. I once did a facilitation for our Taking Flight with Disc program, and we had a group of owls who were we were having a lot of fun. It was a group of adults, grown adults, but they were drawing this beautiful picture on this big poster board of what a party would look like in the parrot world. They were just drawing this party, and as you can imagine, there were colors and streamers and lights and all kinds of crazy stuff going on. And the parrots thought it was great. They're just like, that's exactly what a party would look like. Versus an owl party, which would be more organized. Actually, owls probably wouldn't be at the party.
A
That's just
bookstore,
me. Yeah, but
bookstore
yeah,
meeting,
it,
no?
Barnes and Noble would be a dream party for me. Don't surprise me either. So introverts, right? But here's the cool thing is in this picture they drew, the owls had actually put labels on every food item. Everything was organized. Everything was very, very, angular and defined. So their personality still came through. But what they proved is that they can actually think like someone who is not them. So th the cool thing about it is if you start talking to somebody in the way that works for them, unless you just have absolute contempt, and there is some arguments that certain personality disorders make it very hard for people to do this, but in all intents and purposes, for someone who is able to do this, they're going to notice that you're trying. And they're going to feel that you're attempting. So even if you're terrible at it, which I would say I'm still not wonderful at it, it doesn't take much to have somebody see that you're trying to connect. And if you do it in a way that makes sense to them, they are going to open their arms and say, "This is awesome." And then you go from fighting to collaboration. It's very fast. It's going to happen
Yeah,
very fast. Yeah.
it's amazing. It really shows, it's flexing our styles. It's not a way of not being authentic, but it's more like talking, speaking the other person's language.
Right. And I would argue it's even more authentic because you are authentically trying to do things in a way that you know is important to this person. And you may not be great at it. It's, you know, I say flexing because it's a muscle like any other muscle or mental muscle. It gets stronger with time, but it's not perfect. So you're going to come off as more authentic in a way, thinking that you're less authentic. But the key is you're actually trying to be empathetic. And that's what speaks to anybody, regardless of style. Empathy is a universal language for sure.
True, that it's like really shows we are trying, just like a foreigner tries to speak the native language, let's say.
Absolutely.
And you know, having an accent, but at least there is an effort, right?
Right.
So that's appreciated. So just like learning probably about the styles and how to flex the kind of the muscles in a way of different styles, how an introvert can learn to speak publicly with more ease, to speak in front of a lot of people, and maybe to even speak up for themselves, where usually they would be silent. That it is possible actually to do that through practice, sounds like. And just like we are learning a new language, at the beginning it takes time and it might be challenging and we make mistakes. And the more practice we have, the more we can, the easier it becomes, actually. Any final words before I invite you to share some links or anything that people can find more information about you or about how to learn about the personality styles and the birds?
Sure, I'll end with this because the topic is around difficult conversations, and I will say that you know, just like what we've been talking about today, a great way to get on the path to meeting people where they're at and making conversations easy is something that we coin in our training, is that the fastest way to meet your own needs is to meet the needs of someone else first. So I would say that if you're having trouble communicating with someone, let's just say it's an employee that works for you, it's your direct report there, and you can't seem to get this person to move or to work or whatever the problem may be, I would say ask yourself three total questions here. The first would be, you know, how would I want to do this job? Which is kind of answering the question of what is your style? And you know, you could even, I'll share some resources here shortly. You can go find out what your style is, but really ask yourself, how would I do this? And then ask yourself, how are they doing it? Or rather, what are they not doing that's really, really getting to me? And then from there, I would try and draw the final conclusion of, and you'll find it's very easy to do this, is you'll be able to start seeing how that person is different than you, and you'll stop looking at it as a blatant act of disrespect. And what I mean by this is there was another instance where we had an Eagle CEO who could not get someone to do work. And the CEO was actually very self-aware. He knew he was an Eagle, and but he just did not know the style of this other person. And all but all he did know was that he gave him this big project, full confidence. The person had proved themselves time and time again, but they were taking a really long time this time. They had missed multiple deadlines. And we asked, you know, we asked the CEO, how does that make you feel? And he's like, absolutely disrespected. I've given this person an amazing opportunity here, and they are letting me down. And I, you know, I don't know what the next step is. It might be time for disciplinary measures. And then, you know, comes to find out that this person is an owl. The reason why they're taking so long is because they're so quality driven, and they feel the weight of this responsibility so heavily that they absolutely do not want to make any mistakes. And this is not to justify either side, because the project was behind, it needed help. However, for sake of making it perfect, the owl was taking too long. So the coaching advice that we ended up giving was, you know, you're going to basically help this owl meet him in the middle. Let him know that you're so happy that quality means everything to him, because this cannot be done incorrectly. However, there's also deadlines to be met. So let's explore some other ways to where maybe we can still meet this deadline. Maybe it needs to move back a little further, but actually helping this person streamline towards the goal, breaking it down in a way that is digestible for someone who likes details and quality, but making sure that the push for quality is not to the point where you get into analysis paralysis. And what ends up happening in situations like those is everybody wins. The quality is high enough to where the person who's working on it is proud of it, and the product or service gets pushed out in a respectful time method. And we see time and time again, you know, going back to video games, there was a video game that got released a while ago that and if you like games, you know which one it is, and it was so highly anticipated, and it crashed and burned so hard to the ground because it still probably needed a good 5 years. But for some reason, there might have been some eagle energy there at the top that was like, we got to get it out now.
Let's get it done.
Yeah, left it out, and it just wasn't checked. We had disagreements. You probably have the owls going, you know what, fine, you do it, see what happens. The way that that could have been helped is maybe they could have done it in 2 years. Maybe they could have met those deadlines and stuff. So you see things like that happening. You see the results. Hindsight is 2020. But overall, the advice I would give is, you know, check in with yourself. Who are you? How do you work? How does this other person work? How can we meet each other in the middle? And I would say a good starting point is knowing your personality style. In the Taking Flight with Discworld, knowing which bird you are.
Love that. Thank you. So many takeaways. I'm hearing really how to also balance our own strengths, because each personality has different strengths and how to balance them out so it's not overused and abused by our personality styles, because there are wonderful things about each of the personalities, and kind [S2] Right. [S1] Of really communicating together how that actually, that awareness can help not just our own well-being, but also really even the bottom line of a company, kind of,
right.
The productivity, communication, and also can help keep the marriage alive.
Absolutely. Well said. Absolutely.
Thank you, Stephen. Thank you so much for your time, for sharing your wisdom and experiences and tips with us. How can other people reach you?
Sure. So I'll give you two ways. I like to keep things simple, and that's a skill, because us owls don't enjoy simplicity. We love the complex, but there is a lot of wonderful piece of the simplicity. So, you know, look for me on LinkedIn. It's linkedin.com/in/Stephen Farber. And I'm sure Lucy's going to put that up here for y'all to see. And then you can also check us out at www.takeflightlearning.com. Those are the best places to reach us. If you want to reach me more personally, I'm on LinkedIn all the time. Just shoot me a message. More than happy to share insights and just get to know you.
Thank you so much.